This is Poetry on the Move. In this episode, we talk to Utah poet Catherine Coles. We hear poetry from Niloufar Fanayan. And we talk to poet Melinda Smith and letterpress artist Karen Florence about poetry and collaboration. But first, Catherine Coles. Catherine Coles' fifth poetry collection, The Earth Is Not Flat, was written under the auspices of the National Science Foundation's Antarctic Artists and Writers Program. Her sixth collection, Flight, was published in 2016. A professor at the University of Utah, she served from 2006 to 2012 as Utah's Poet Laureate, and in 2009 and 2010 as the inaugural director of the Poetry Foundation's Harriet Munro Poetry Institute. Paul Hetherington caught up with Catherine at the Great Writing Conference in London this year.
Kate, you've just had a book come out in April of this year called Flight. And it's a book I think you were working on even before you went to Antarctica, which also saw you publish another book. So there's two books which, from my reading of them, actually seem connected in some ways, but also are very different. One's preoccupied with a particular and quite unusual place, that's Antarctica, and another one is kind of preoccupied with, I think, interesting visceral and conceptual matter. So could you talk a little bit about Flight and then perhaps also connect it to the Antarctica volume?
Sure. Well, I had already been working on Flight for some time, a year or two anyway, before I was sent to Antarctica, and I knew I had to interrupt it in order to do the Antarctica project because I had promised the National Science Foundation that I would do this thing, and I was going to have to write a report, but also because one wants to take advantage, if one can, immediately of what's happening. I think that going over, I was actually, as I was preparing to go over, I was a little bit nervous about whether I would be able to rise to the occasion as a poet or whether the place would overwhelm me and I would not be able to meet it on any terms at all. But fortunately, I went back and wrote my original proposal, which, you know, these things are actually a kind of fiction that if you were really honest, you would say, well, I'm just going to go to this really remarkable place, and I'm going to hang out with some penguins and icebergs, and if I'm really lucky, I'm going to write some poems, and maybe the scientists will talk to me, and that would be good, too. But I had actually constructed this very elaborate proposal, and I had forgotten what was in it. And I went back and revisited it as I was preparing to go, and I thought, oh, this actually does reflect my interests and preoccupations, which at that time already were about perception. And also, I think about an increasing movement or attempt to move toward both freedom and joy in my work, because a young poet thinks that all the poems have to be about the sad things, and I was really trying to figure out how to accommodate the happy things. And I was also trying to figure out how to express thought and the progress of thought and experience with a kind of immediacy that we know is artificially created in the poem, because the poem is a made thing, a constructed thing, but trying to capture some sense of that. So I'd been working on the poems in Flight, which take place sometimes in the present, sometimes in memory, sometimes in my hometown of Salt Lake City, sometimes in Pompeii or Paris, many of which are love poems. I stopped that and I went off to Antarctica and I wrote this series, I think, of very intensely, very quickly produced poems that were really about responding to and perceiving that place and trying to figure out what that place was and what I meant within that place, what the meaning of a human being and a human perception in that place that is in some ways inimical to human life or human apprehension. Came back, had delivered that collection in probably 7 or 8 months after having been in Antarctica, and took a few deep breaths and then came back and finished flight. And so the flight, I think of flight as being the body that contains this intensity that was the Antarctica book.
That's really interesting. And do you think that in terms of making, you mentioned making, and your sense of your craft, that these experiences and these books have opened up any kind of new attitudes or approaches to your craft along the way? Because my feeling is that maybe there's I think you've always valued a certain clarity and simplicity in your work to an extent, but I kind of feel maybe you're getting more of that somehow, or there's a greater density within that somehow. I'm not sure, quite sure. I mean, what would you say about that?
So I think I do value clarity and simplicity. I think I'm not mistaken if I characterize my work over time as being kind of thinky. You know, it's very much about the act of thinking and what I call passionate thinking, by which I mean embodied thinking, recognition and an experience of thinking as a bodily act and not separate from that. And I think that the movement in my poems has been toward trying to let the reader have that experience in an immediate way without me stepping in to kind of explain or mediate or direct too much. I'd like, if passionate thinking is for me a kind of white-knuckled experience, I'd like the reader also to have a white-knuckled experience and not have the gaps so much filled in. So a lot of that more filler or explanatory material falls away as the poem comes into its presence as a poem.
Yeah, that's interesting. And in terms of your more or most recent poetry, which you're writing at the moment, do you think that's opening up another space for you, or do you see it as a continuation of the flight motif?
I think that it incorporates, sort of swallows, right, what has gone before, and I hope is a validation of that. But I think, I almost hate to talk about it this way, but there are a lot of things I used to really care about in my poems, and I use care really intentionally, because you talk about the carefulness, right, that I don't care about so much anymore. I hope that the poems are moving toward a carelessness or a recklessness or an ability to trust. Say you're a tightrope walker, but the rope's not there until you put your foot down.
Yeah.
And you have to trust that when you put your foot down, the rope will appear to hold you. I think that's the metaphor that I would use for what I'm after right now.
Yeah. So it's a kind of, there's risk involved, mm-hmm. but also some reliance on the craft and the skill and the knowledge that has come with the writing that mm-hmm. you've done for so long.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it, that that opening up of a space, of in a way it's an empty space, and you're filling it with a poem, and the poem is telling you, in a way, what's being made there. Are you feeling that the poems are speaking back to you?
I am feeling that, I think, in a way more than ever, and leading me and guiding me. And you know, we just had a conversation, you and I, a few minutes ago, and I think you said you published your first book in 1991, and I published my first book in 1990, so we really are poetry contemporaries in a very close kind of way. And it looks to me and your work too as if you, all of this work that you've done to be meticulous and obsessive about craft, maybe allows you to set that aside and just trust that it will be there. And I've told my students for years, and now I feel as if I'm experiencing it, that, you know, you want to have every tool in your toolbox. You don't want to reject any poetic options, any poetic schools. And then when you're moving fast and you need that tool, you'll reach to your box and it will come to hand, and it won't always be the hammer because it's not always the nail.
That was Catherine Coles. Persian-Australian poet Niloufer Fenayan has lived and worked in the US, the Netherlands and Tanzania, and now lives in Canberra. She is reading here from Transit, her first collection of poetry that revolves around ideas, ancient and modern, of travelling.
Secrets of salt. Del bedel roh dorad. Through the skies, waterfowl fly in formation, over hills and plains, past my window of four squares, through which I see but cannot touch the gradual mutation of colour on the horizon, the disappearance of birds beyond the blue line, smattering of stars blending into nightlights, against faint echoes of the warbling bulbulo atregolob winding through time, a diaspora searching, multitudes crawling backwards through the snow. Geometric patterns of blue and red appear on two squares of window. Not unusual, considering the crawling and the cold. The barfoyach ke be ostochon mi chaspad, vali garmoye dil ra az bein nemi barad. Guftan dil be dil roh darad. Across oceans and on separate lands, we stand on sandy beaches, mottled by the one moonlight, shadowed by memories of labhoy modar bar pishuni farzand. Our tongues taste the salt of tears, of generations of earth and water, as waves that once washed over your feet approach the leaning palm trees where I stand. I hear many voices speak. Dastam ra begir, chashmha ra beband, dil be dil roh darad. As we dig deeper into the ground, searching for the earth's subconscious, seeking the collective heart, the darker soil yields its secrets, its star-made particles. Souls lead to souls, thoughts lead to thoughts, hearts lead to hearts. Dil be dil roh darad, hearts lead to hearts. In a many-layered cotton sling. This was never meant to be our home. We rented four walls and a patch of soil, taught ourselves the local language, drank from the village well, till a warm current came down from the mountain and stirred the wings of silence. We packed our hearts in a homespun purse, primed the feathers with thyme and lavender, left our songs by the last door, left our paintings by the last window, curled up in a sling of many-layered cotton, and submitted to the wings of silence. Silence carried us far, but far was near. Silence made space for spinning, cleared the canvas for drawing more dreams. Silence was when we remembered our prayers, when we wrote new songs and sang, a warm current beneath the wings of silence. Salt and cucumber. She entered his life with salt and cucumber, the light minerally smell as she bit into the fruit wafted across the aisle, carried him to his uncle's garden on a hot summer day. She paused to sprinkle some salt over the pale green flesh, then turned to look at him. Would you like one? His eyes widened slightly. Help me finish them. We can't take them, through customs, you know. And she handed over a fresh little cucumber with a tiny packet of salt. Two rough hands broke the cucumber in half. A soft crunch sounded. Drops of bitter liquid dripped into the soil below. It was dark and overly warm. Crickets chirped in a deep pitch from two rows back. They're from my mother's garden, her voice echoed in the cabin. Two grains of salt lingered on her lower lip like two lost stars. He looked up at his uncle with pursed lips. A little more salt would hide the bitterness, would alter the soil would alter the cricket song and the stars on her lips. The wind picked up speed, and he asked for another cucumber.
That was Niloufer Fenayan. Her book Transit is out now from Recent Work Press. Next, I talk with poet Melinda Smith and letterpress artist Karen Florence, who have established a long-term collaborative practice. In part one of this conversation, I ask Melinda and Karen about collaboration between different art forms, how their relationship has formed, and what their collaboration means to them and their work. Melinda Smith is an Australian poet who won the poetry section of the Prime Minister's Literary Awards in 2014 for her collection Dragged Down to Unlock or Place an Emergency Call. She lives in Canberra with her partner and their two sons. Karen Florence's practice covers a wide range of print activities that spans from letterpress, fine press printing, to artist books and visual art. She is widely collected across Australia, New Zealand and the UK and operates under the imprint of Ampersand Duck.
You guys have been working together for a long time as collaborators. One of you is a poet, one of you is a printmaker and visual artist and letterpress artist. How do you, how do you keep this idea of collaborating between these different art forms? How do you keep this thing going?
I'm trying to think how the very first way we started working together. We were introduced by a mutual acquaintance visual artist called Kirsten Farrell, who we've both known for a very long time. She said, "You need to know Karen." And I went, "Okay." And we clicked on a personal level. And I think if you're ever going to collaborate with someone, obviously you have to be able to stand them, and they have to be able to stand you, and you have to bear with each other.
Sense of humour is very important.
Yes. Yeah. And I think what I like about collaborating with someone from another discipline is it gets you out of your own head. It challenges you to see your work in a different way. It gives you new ways of producing work because you're often working from different constraints. If you're just writing a poem, you might think, oh, well, I want this to, have a particular syllabic form, or I want it to, be this particular length, or I want it to contain these words or something. But when you're working in a different medium, things like dimensions of your work and what colour the different letters are going to be and how they're going to kind of vibrate with other things on the page or on the artwork kind of become equally important considerations. And I just love that kind of refresh of my creative practice that I get from working with Karen. And collaborating with other people too, but I do a lot of my collaborating with Karen. And, so I don't know how we keep it going or how it got started, but we're on a number of projects together at the moment, and I can't see us, breaking up anytime soon. She might have different views about that.
Absolutely. I would like to just say that Linda said everything there is to be said about the actual why you collaborate with someone else. I mean, it does take you out of your own head, and it does change everything you do, but Melinda's particularly, one of the reasons I will continue is because it's one of the only times I get to see her. We have to schedule it every week. But Melinda writes in a particular way. I collaborate with a number of poets, but Melinda's way of working with playing with, acrostic, all the different sort of wordplay,
text-based kind of play. Yeah.
She's got a particular way that makes it really good with letterpress. Like there's a one that she did called Red Language that's one line that just gets reconfigured over and over again to make different meanings. And that with that, it was fantastic because I just had to set one line and then print it 15 times. It was really good.
Just rearranging the
letters.
So it's kind of easier for you to work with Melinda than you by yourself.
I caught up with some typographers recently up in Queensland, and they were talking about one of the biggest problems for designers is content. Like you can have as many skills as you want, but if you don't have content, you're sort of stuck doing the same old platitudes. And so by using other people's words, that aren't platitudes, that's the biggest appeal for me. There's some beautiful posters out there, but I like using juicy words, and poetry is juicy. And it's sort of words that you can it's funny, you can play with Melinda, you can play with the words, but other people want their words as is. And so you have to break through that sort of, you know, trust issue with, like, you know, the concept of words and, yeah.
I guess as a letterpress artist, you're constantly working with other people's words. And as you say, it's quite restrictive in some forms, but does this...
Poetry is the last bastion of authorship, seriously.
Yeah.
Poets spend so much time working out where they want their words to go and what they want them to say. They don't want them to be moved around at all.
Right.
It's got to be... Poets are designers. You know, they're working with the page constantly. They know where they want on the page their thing to be done. You know, everything's orchestrated to a certain degree. They're like, you know, they usually have no idea about fonts and that sort of thing. But, you know, it's pretty much, you know, as you see the poem is how they want it, centred, left-ranging, you know, stanzas, all that sort of stuff. And so when you find poets that are willing to play, that's fun.
I think of it as making a new work. Or there are several different versions of the work. There's the work that's on the standard kind of page, which is meant to interact with someone who's reading it alone.
Yep.
There's the performed work where the voice and the breath and the duration and the way you interact with the audience makes it a different thing. And then there's if it goes into, something that's going to be letterpressed either in an artist book or on a wall, that's a new version of the work as far
Absolutely.
As I'm concerned. So I'm totally happy for it to morph in whatever way it wants
to
morph.
It's like a musical arrangement.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Just keep on riffing. You know, one of the frustrations for me with the kind of traditional model of working as a poet is that you have deadlines and you have a publication date and everything has to stop moving so that it can be set and printed.
Concretized.
Concretized, exactly. And the way I work, I keep fiddling right up until the last minute. I frustrate people endlessly because of
this. You're allowed to fiddle afterwards, too. You're the author.
And, and so I like the idea that, you know, I can keep exploring the possibilities of a work after it's been, you know, printed once in a poetry book or after I've, you know, set it down as a draft.
Yeah.
And one of the... That's one of the joys of working with Karen is that, you know, we get to do that.
Do you find yourself as a poet composing specifically for the collaboration, knowing its parameters now, or are you still comfortable with using stuff that has, say, been printed that is your, you know, proper poet's poetry?
Everything we work with is her proper poetry.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as improper poetry. You know?
We do. I mean, because of the...
We gave ourselves rules.
Yeah, we gave ourselves rules. This particular collaboration that we're working on at the moment forms part of Karen's PhD work, but came out of something that we did separately that was the Museum of Australian Democracy at Old Parliament House set up, put out a call out for people to reinterpret furnishings. And we chose a room full of hand-lettered wooden signs and decided to reinterpret them as a team, as it were. Mm-hmm. And we've done, out of that collaboration, grew the actual exhibition pieces, which were hand-lettered wooden signs, and Karen probably love to talk about them in a second. And also we've now got an artist's book that's in the latest stages of being prepared, and we're going to do a chapbook as well. And all of that, the poems in that and the word art in that has grown out of that collaboration. So that's been specifically written for that collaboration. But some of it has gone on to have other life as well. Some of the poems I've written for this collaboration have just, you know, are about to be published separately in a book of mine because they stand alone well enough in the book. But a lot of them don't. They need the context of the works that we've made together in order to have their full resonance, so there's no point taking them out and sticking them anywhere else.
So you actually find for your own practice as a poet that this collaboration, you know, inspires things rather than sort of you contributing, do you know what I mean? It's sort of things come out of it rather than you feeling like you're sort of contributing something to a joint effort.
Yeah, I mean, the things that come out of it are bonuses and surprises, and but you know we are actually working to make things, and so we do have deadlines and we do have times by which we hope to get things finished, and that's helpful too, because as a poet working on your own, you're often not as subject to those kinds of pressures. And for someone like me who likes to keep fiddling, deadlines are actually important.
Yeah.
As a way of making you at least say, right, that's a version of it. So it gives back in lots of ways. It makes us make work together, and it makes us gives us inspiration and content for our own spin-off work that we do separately.
And also, you know, the different formats we've been using. The original installation was for a public audience, and then, you know, you can't put certain things, chapbooks, it's really hard to put a lot of images in it. I mean, we can, but you sort of want a solid body of work that pulls together. And then the artist book, you can do whatever you want. Yeah. And in fact, my artist, this book that we're doing, it's sort of straddling the line between fine press and artist book. And
Karen, as a letterpress artist, you're always working or often working with other people's letters and words, and the art is about how you materially arrange them. But for you, Melinda, do you enjoy seeing your work, you know, transformed in a way? And do you enjoy the transformation of your work into visual art or into artist books or into, you know, a field that you're not...
Or a dance,
yeah, or, you know.
I totally enjoy all of that stuff because I think many poets want readers, and sometimes the best way to get readers is to get out from between the covers of a little slim volume of poetry and go be on a wall or be on a poster or, you know, be in an artist book or in a gallery rather than in a library. Karen mentioned dance. I've done a collaboration with Alison Plevy, who's a very well-known and acclaimed local dance artist, and she did that poem Red Language actually as a series. She made a vocabulary of, you know, choreographed movements that one per word, and for the 11 words in the line of the poem she would do them in the order that they were in, and then the next line of the poem would have the 11 words rearranged, and she would do the movements in the different order, and she had to, and there's 10 lines in the poem, I think, so it was an incredible feat of memory for her to try and perform that and know what was coming as I was reading the poem out. Anyway, that, you know, I didn't particularly ever like that poem. I made it as a kind of exercise, but because it's had so many other lives, I actually have come to really enjoy it now. You know, so yeah, I love seeing the works go places that they were not necessarily even intended to go, and more the better as far as I'm concerned.
That was Melinda Smith and Karen Florence. Next time we'll hear more from Karen and Melinda on their current collaboration, Members Only, based on material from Old Parliament House in Canberra. This has been Poetry on the Move. I'd like to thank our guests Catherine Coles, Niloufer Fanayan, Melinda Smith and Karen Florence. This podcast is made possible by IPSI, the International Poetry Studies Institute, and the Centre for Creative and Cultural Research, Faculty of Arts and Design at the University of Canberra. Thanks for listening.